If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson, here on the Maroon Friday edition of the Yard. It's actually Thursday evening. We're getting a head start. We got a full day in Starkville on Friday. Of course, we have Pro Day. And then, of course, in the evening out at Oxford, Bulldogs will take on Ole Miss in game one of a very important three-game series. It's always important, not just because it's Ole Miss, but because it's the next weekend of Southeastern Conference play. We're going to break down Ole Miss today, tell you what to expect. We'll get to the pitching rotation for both teams. We'll look ahead to the weekend and see what else is out there. We'll have a good time today. Hope that you guys are doing well wherever you are. If you're listening on Friday, I hope it's a payday for you, and perhaps it is for you weekly and biweekly wage earners. I don't know your pay schedule, but I hope if you have some resources this weekend, you get out and enjoy some time with the people you love the most. Let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of this show. Man, I love Bulldog Burger Company. And Bulldog Burger Company is always the move, right? There's so much consistency with what they do. It's one of those things where I never leave there feeling worse than when I went in, right? Because typically you go in, you're hungry, you need to get some nourishment. But I don't just eat there for nourishment. I eat there for enjoyment because they do such a great job. Wonderful service, great selection. A very diverse menu. Some days I'm feeling a burger. Some days I'm feeling a salad. Trying to get a couple of salads in weekly, you know. But I love that BLT salad. It is my favorite salad. I prefer it grilled. You may like it fried. It is quite a substantial portion. I don't know if I've ever fully finished it. If I have, it's a rarity. It is. You get your money's worth for sure. Three great locations to serve you: University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. You can now get those new Smash Burgers. I meant to go get one today to give you a review tomorrow, but we had some leftovers I wanted to polish off. And so we'll definitely get a Smash Burger at some point this weekend, perhaps tonight, and let you know all about it. It's one of the new items on the new menu at Bulldog Burger Company. I always like to keep it fresh. And they've got their menu redo going on right now, so you need to be prepared for that. If you are a Bulldog Burger Company regular, there's some new items to both nourish and entertain you. Yeah, it's right. It's true. Get that chocolate shake to go. You can ride that ride home with a smile. And as always, get the spring rolls. They are the best appetizer in Starkville proper. They'll make you better looking. They will. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet, M-E-A-T. All right. Let's jump into Ole Miss. I watched two games between Ole Miss and Kentucky before we did the show. Because I haven't had a chance to watch them much. And I wanted a chance to kind of look and see kind of what this team looks like. And I think they might actually be a better team than I thought. And granted, they won the series against Kentucky. So, yeah, they probably played well. So I think I probably saw them close to their best. It's going to be a real challenge for us. It always is. Anytime you go on the road in the SEC, it's a real challenge. And even though State has dominated the decade, the last time we went up there, we lost the series. We went all in to win on Saturday, if you remember. We won big on Friday and had a chance to close out the weekend with a winning weekend on Saturday. And we blew three leads in that game. We go all in, and then by Sunday, we just don't have any pitching left. And they got us. They did. They win the series, first time in forever. Let's look back and see how the season has gone for the Ole Miss Rebels. They're 19-7 overall, 3-3 in the Southeastern Conference, just one game out of first place behind us and several other teams. They are 17-1 at home. That is a significant stat, and some of that, too, is also because the quality of competition they played non-conference. That's not an indictment on them. Not a lot of us play a lot of home games early on against substantial competition. They're 1-4 in true road games and 1-2 in neutral side games. We'll get to all that stuff. They opened up with a three-game sweep of Nevada. The final game on Sunday ended up being a mercy rule game of 13-2. But Nevada, the Wolfpack, only scored six runs on the weekend. Arkansas State nearly pulls off an upset in Oxford. You know, Arkansas State took two or three from Southern Miss to open up Sun Belt play. 7-6 is your final. Ole Miss had to come from behind to win that game. They mercy roll Jackson State 18-3, and then they get into this Missouri State team that is currently got a top 10 RPI. Some very competitive games here. They win on Friday 11-6. That's the only one that there was some real separation. Saturday is a 6-3 ball game, and then a nip and tuck game on Sunday, and the Rebels win it 3-2. Another mercy rule game awaited in the midweek as they got SEMO, Southeast Missouri State, 13-3. And so at this point, a lot of people are thinking, hey, this Ole Miss team is really good. It's fair to say they were undefeated, headed to Houston, Texas to play in the Bruce Bolt College Classic. They lose in 10 to Baylor. For their first loss of the year, they bounced back and beat Ohio State. And there were a lot of Ole Miss people that were really excited about that win. It's not football, okay? It's not football. Ohio State, Justin Harris, the coach there, and a lot of our fans wanted him to be our next coach. I said then, what worries me about mid-major coaches is they just really struggle to know what an SEC player looks like on the recruiting trail. Ohio State is 10-13, as you guys know. 1-5 in Big Ten play. So, really not a great win. Again, it's a helmet sticker win in football, not so much in baseball. And then Coastal Carolina, a kind of depleted Coastal Carolina pitching staff, gets a 9-2 victory over Ole Miss. So they go 1-2 on the weekend in Houston and dropped out of the top 25. They bounce back to get Memphis and Oxford 7-1. More on that series later. They get North Alabama 8-5. And again, it was kind of one of those humdrum midweek games. Evansville, the Purple Aces, our friends, they rolled in. And Ole Miss plays a doubleheader on Friday. And then they're off on Saturday and come back on Sunday. The back half of that doubleheader was 14-2, another mercy rule game. So the Rebels take all three, including the 8-3 decision on Sunday. They go down to Hattiesburg and give the Golden Eagles a lot of credit. They've beaten State and Ole Miss in their home venue. They Golden Eagles walk off Ole Miss 2-1 in that ball game. And again, great job midweek pitching-wise for both teams. Southern Miss just got one more hit than Ole Miss did. Now, Ole Miss, kind of a wild game against Texas. And again, that was a huge win at the time. And I think it still matters to go to Texas and get one. You feel pretty good about that. But it was a crazy ninth inning. Guys, this game was over. It was over, or so it felt, right? It's 7-3 going to the ninth. 7-3 in favor of Texas. And you get into the ninth, and it's kind of a crazy, crazy situation here. Texas bullpen's not great. This was kind of the first time it really kind of reared its ugly head. They get a hit by pitch, a walk, and a hit by pitch. So they load the bases without the benefit of a hit. Ground ball to the first baseman, gets the first out, run score, 7-4, you're still good. And then Udermark fouls out the first. You think, hey, you're good here. Okay, there's two outs, we're a pitch away from going home with a big Friday night SEC win. Then they walk Will Furness. Well, that loads the bases again. And then, what do you know? Bissetta, with two outs and a 1-0 count, hits a grand slam to give Ole Miss an 8-7 lead. So five runs in the ninth for Ole Miss. Makes all the difference in the world. Texas has to rally and score one in the ninth to force extra innings, and then Ole Miss wins it in the 11th. So again, hey, people say, well, you know, they should have been swept. Well, you could make that argument. However, Texas didn't execute, and Ole Miss did. That's why Ole Miss won the ballgame. Game two was a much different dynamic. Texas gets them 11-2, and then 8-2 on Sunday. So very focused A&M team. And again, this Ole Miss offense has kind of been feast or famine. And of course, they were gifted some base runners in that ninth inning. But hey, that's baseball. That's how it works. If you don't throw strikes, people get on base. Austin Peay was the midweek game on March 17th. The Governors give it a go, but then lose 9-5 to Ole Miss. And then last weekend, Kentucky really had some opportunities in this game. This is one of the games that I watched. Ole Miss won at 5-0. I thought Hunter Elliott was pretty good. Not great, but pretty good. He has some really strong run into the hands on right-handed hitters. He will challenge guys and kind of force weak contact. But they get three home runs in the game. I don't remember. Nevertheless, a lot of the offense came. But you know what? When you don't give up runs, doesn't matter how many home runs you hit, right? You just need to score. And they did. 5-0. Ole Miss only used two pitchers in that game. And, again, a quality start from Hunter Elliott. They get a good start on Saturday, but somehow lose the ball game. In case you haven't heard, too, Ole Miss is Elliott on Friday and then TBA the rest of the way. It's just kind of part of how it works, right? Ole Miss started Calhoun, and he was just okay. He goes 3 2/3 of an inning, allows 3 runs on 3 hits, 7 strikeouts, 3 walks in there. So it was a game, but they end up losing the game 3-1. So then that sets up a big rubber game, and Kentucky, again, had every opportunity to win this game. You know, they get up early 2-0, and then Ole Miss scratches one back in the second. They hit a grand slam in the fourth. Well, guess what? Kentucky comes back and does that as part of a 6-run fifth. And now you're thinking, okay, it's 8-5, they'll be good. But no, Ole Miss wouldn't go away. They wouldn't. They get 1-6 and 3-7. So now it's a really interesting game. Kentucky in the eighth gets 1 for 9 runs. Now you start thinking, okay, guys, it's 9-9. It's a 6-out fight. Well, Ole Miss wins it by scoring 3 in the eighth, and then they close it out there in the ninth to win it 12-9. So competitive series for sure. Then Ole Miss goes to Memphis. We discussed that on Wednesday's show. Kind of a crazy turnaround game there. Memphis was 6-16 coming into the game. They get the win. That's one of those losses that just feels like an anchor the rest of the year. You split the series with them, but they're not doing well and will probably end up with a losing record. So that's how we've gotten to this point. And again, you look at the schedule. Again, not a lot of people play difficult opponents, but this non-conference schedule, I don't know what the metrics say, but it hasn't been great. Baylor, just the middle of the road, Big 12 team, they lose to them. They beat an Ohio State team that is 1-5 in the Big Ten. And then Coastal Carolina was the national runner-up last year, so they lose to them. And to lose to Southern Miss in Pete Taylor Park, no shame in that. But it hasn't been a very challenging non-conference schedule. And that's one of the things to kind of understand. Yeah, you get Southern Miss and you get Austin Peay in the midweek, and Austin Peay, athlete to athlete, an SEC team shouldn't lose to them. You know, we did a couple years ago, one of their best teams in history. But the reality of it is you don't look at this schedule and say, hey, man, they got a bunch of great wins. They've got the one against Texas that really kind of jumps off the page, because you win in Austin. That's like the bare minimum. When you go on the road to the SEC, you want to at least get one. You got to avoid being swept. And they did in very dramatic fashion. Let's kind of look inside the numbers here. Listen, there are some guys offensively here that have done some incredible things. But before we get to that, I've got some numbers of my own. Let's see here. They've played in 26 games. They've hit home runs in 22 of those 26 games. In the four games they have not hit a home run, the record is 1-3. In 6 of 7 of their losses, they've scored 2 or fewer runs. The one exception was the 6-5 loss to Baylor. So this is an offense that has really struggled for consistency. Mike Bianco told me that when I interviewed him earlier this week. It's got to be more consistent. As an offense, they've struck out 238 times. Yeah, it's part of it. And so in games that they have had double-digit strikeouts as an offense, their record is 5-4. And so I share that with you to kind of illustrate this is kind of a free-swinging team. They are hunting the fastball, and I hate to kind of diminish the offensive philosophy to this, but the best way to kind of explain it is it's kind of like beer league softball, right? A lot of guys go up there looking for the fastball, looking for the big swing. Now, some of their lefties, like Will Furness, has not really been going. He hit an Oppo Taco against Kentucky for his second home run of the year. But they've got some guys on a left-handed side that are willing to take the ball the other way, and Bassetta has power the other way. What, did he have 5 home runs last week? I mean, he is a dangerous hitter. Transferred in from Clemson. Leads them with a .384 average, has 38 hits on the year, 14 jacks, 38 RBI. But the way they put their roster construction together, you can't just pitch around him, especially with a left-hander, right? Because you think lefty-lefty matchup should favor the pitcher. Well, you walk him, they've been putting Jude Uttermark behind him, so it's the lefty-right thing. So you really don't want to walk the lefty to get to the righty, if that makes a lot of sense. So, hey, that's good on Bianco, right? A couple things that's important.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Important to note, too, is we've got our analytics. Ole Miss hitting 257 against lefties and 276 against righties. So about 20 points higher against righties. And so lefties, we're going to start two this weekend. Charlie Foster will draw the nod on Friday, and he's a former weekend starter, and he's a guy that we have high hopes for. He has big potential at times. He has been a little bit up and down. But to kind of explain what that means, you know, if you're going to throw Pitzer, who's a righty, you're kind of playing to their strength. You throw Ben Davis, you're kind of decimating your own bullpen and making your closer unavailable. So I wondered, would we not go with Maddox Miller because of their, at times, inability to hit left-handed pitching? And again, Bissetta has. You know, he, again, power the other way. When you're big, fast, and strong, sometimes it doesn't matter, right? And the guy's a big leaguer. I really, really like his game. But I think that kind of explains why we would go with Charlie. Number one, starting experience, has pitched some in the SEC, and a lefty seems to be the right decision. We don't have a lot of left-handers that can start, so let's run him out there. Then maybe you bring in Pitzer, and then if need be, then Maddox Miller, and then Ben Davis, and hopefully you can close this thing out. But yeah, Bissetta's numbers just jump off the page. And the thing that I liked about him watching him against Kentucky is just how effortless he takes the ball the other way with power. He hit a solo shot into the bullpen, and then the next time he hit one into the left center field power alley, it was hit even harder than the first one. That first one, I won't say it leaked over. It was pretty much gone off the bat, but it was very impressive to see him hit the ball that hard to the left center field power alley. This guy is a legitimate prospect, and you got to be careful with him. Now, there's 32 strikeouts, too, and 99 at-bats. You know, so he's striking out about one every three times, and that's one of the things you got to consider. I think working away from him could be a dicey proposition. I think you got to bust him in. I think you got to keep the ball low, and you got to bust him in. Colin Reuter is another guy, and one of the things that I've learned about Ole Miss over the years, because Mike Bianco has been there now, 26 seasons? Guys, he's going to have good catchers. With rare exception, Bianco's going to have good catchers. They got a couple of them. Colin Reuter has played in 25 games and kind of moves around a little bit. He can catch. He can kind of be a utility guy if they need him to be. But 329 is his average. Just three jacks, 22 ribbies. But the guy's getting on base, right? Judd Uedermark, it seems like he's been there forever. Forever. A bigger guy, fairly athletic. He's got 10 jacks, 26 RBI. And is walking at a higher rate than normal. 6 of 7 in stolen bases. You don't expect to see that a lot. Will Furness, and again, another guy that feels like he's been there forever, but he's only hitting 289. And that's the thing about this team. When you begin to kind of dig into the regulars, there's only three guys that are hitting 300-plus, and that's Bissetta, Reuter, and Uedermark. Furness hitting 289. We know what he can do, right? We kind of pitched around him some last year. I think lefty-lefty may work well against him, you know, so we'll kind of see how things work here. But Furness is one of those guys that has had some big games against State. And, again, he's an LSU legacy. You know, Eddie Furness's son, obviously his relationship with Bianco. There's probably times that LSU wish they had him. I mean, he's had kind of an up-and-down career, but he is a big physical guy. One of the guys to me that really jumped off the screen watching them is this shortstop, Braden Randall. Listen, he's only hitting 241. He had a big triple. He kind of pulled it inside the bag at first, and the first baseman kind of misplayed it. Turns into a triple. But defensively, this guy's elite. He's not the biggest guy. He's not Gonzalez, right, who is a freak, right? He's not that guy. But he's one of these quick twitch, early anticipating middle infielders that can kind of move on instinct. And there were a couple of shots off the bats of Kentucky I thought were destined for left field, and he runs it down. A couple of them, he made some really big throws. And you see him, and he's not the biggest kid, but this is a guy that you can tell grew up playing baseball. He's got one jack this year and just nine RBI. But he can scoot a little bit. He's 4 or 5 in stolen bases. That's not really their strength, but they will kind of run situationally. But as a team, they're just hitting 270. Now, I don't know if you've kind of kept up. You say 270. What does that mean? Give me some context, Steve. Well, I can do that for you. That's what I'm here for, to educate, entertain, and inform. And so we get a little deeper into this thing, you know, team hitting statistics, right? So Ole Miss right now, again, 14th in the league. 14th, Mississippi State hitting 347 as a team. So we're about 77 percentage points ahead of them. The only two teams behind them, batting average-wise, is Alabama and South Carolina. South Carolina, of course, is 16th. But it's an interesting dynamic with this Ole Miss team. Kind of back to our initial point about this offense. It's very much feast or famine. They come out there, take big swings. When they connect, the ball travels a long way. It does. When they miss big. Mississippi State has 39 home runs this year. Ole Miss has 46. They played a game more, but 7 more. And again, it's really kind of a product of the offense. When you look at strikeouts, though, this is the thing that kind of jumps out to me. Ole Miss last in the SEC as an offense with 238 strikeouts. So, again, to kind of illustrate the point, you got to go in there and you got to be around the plate. And they're willing to chase a little bit, right? A little bit. And so pitching's got to be on point for sure in this ball game, and we got to make sure that we don't walk. Like, because if you do give up a home run, you want it to be a solo shot. And several of the home run states allowed have been solo home runs. It's kind of a product of getting a lead and just throwing strikes and saying, hey, if they hit it out of the ballpark, they do. But I want you throwing strikes. Just don't walk anybody. Stolen bases are 26 of 31. And again, it's not maybe a strong tenet of their offense. They kind of do it situationally. You know, they're playing for the big inning, right? They're not trying to run themselves into an out. And it's just an interesting deal with them. And when you look at them, I mean, they're a big physical team. And Hayden Federico is a guy, too, that though he is a switch hitter and he's hitting 222, he's actually hitting left-handers a lot better. That is not atypical for switch hitters, right? Especially guys that are naturally right-handed that hit left-handed. Fundamentally and mechanically, you're a little more conscious of things as a left-handed hitter, right? Because it's not natural, right? So you kind of revert to your training. Sometimes as a right-handed hitter, well, this just feels natural. I just do what I do. There are guys that are just a little more acutely aware of what's happening when they're hitting op-handed. And so Federico, you look at that number and you see he's 222. If he ends up having a pretty good weekend this weekend, don't be surprised because State is planning to start two left-handers, and that kind of plays to his strong suit. So, just kind of throwing that out there. Just because it's one of those things that kind of pops up to me. If I did my own scouting report, that's one of the things that I would consider. Now, he's not a guy that can really hurt you, but he is a guy that'll put the ball in play. Hunter Elliott will get the Friday night start, and again, they're TBA Saturday and Sunday. And again, Hunter Elliott, it feels like he's been there forever. I joke with Mike Bianco. I said, it feels like he's been there almost as long as you have. But 3.48 ERA, so he has given up maybe more runs than he has historically. The strikeout-to-walk ratio is not what you'd expect either. It's basically 2-1, 44 Ks against 20 walks. In addition to that, he's got 7 hit-by-pitches. That's not what you'd expect, right? 31 innings pitch, but he's well beneath the hit per. He's at 21 hits. Now, they've made some plays defensively behind him sometimes, and sometimes they haven't. They're not a bad defensive team. They're I would say, a good, maybe not great defensive team. They also have the propensity to throw the ball away, especially on pickoffs. Hunter Elliott had 2 of those in his start against Kentucky back on Thursday. So that's something to consider, too. And Hunter Elliott is a guy, too, with the benefit of a strong catcher. Hunter Elliott can kind of shut down the running game because, number one, being a left-hander and having arguably one of the best moves to first in college baseball. There are times I think he balks and gets away with it, but he has worked really hard to kind of slow that thing down. And, you know, sometimes we're going to go on first move, and sometimes we're going to guess wrong, and we got to hope we get it. But doesn't always work out that way. But 3-0 is the record. He obviously, he's had three other no decisions. He's got six starts this year. But maybe not working as deep into games as maybe you would hope. Averaging right at five per. He worked a little bit deeper against Kentucky, and that's one of the things for us. We got to get him out of the game and get into that bullpen. That's a significant part of it. Of course, he got the year back. So again, we fully expect him, you know, to sign this year. And listen, comes from a great family. A lot of people will tell you, you know, really good people. But yeah, he worked into the seventh, but every other thing has been five innings or so. So it's going to eventually turn into a bullpen game with him. Now, Will Lebert started on Sunday against Kentucky and immediately put two guys on. And then next thing you know, they're kind of off to the races. He's 2-2 this year in six starts, 6.41 ERA. If they trot him out there against us on Sunday, advantage Bulldogs. I watched him. I was not impressed with him. I didn't think his body language was good. I think, you know, when he throws the breaking ball with conviction, he can get some swing and miss with it. I just don't think the fastball maybe is dynamic enough. And I think the numbers kind of bear that out. In 26 and two-thirds of an inning, he's given up over a hit per. That's 29. And kind of factor in, too, that's with only a couple of SEC starts. He's allowed 20 runs, 19 of them earned, in 26 innings. 32 strikeouts against 12 walks, so it's about 3-1. He's also hit three guys. It's not atypical, but opponents are hitting .287 against him. The big question is Kay Townsend going to pitch? He's had five starts, and Bianco said he feels confident that he'll be back. He may be back this weekend. And we'll see what the availability report shows. But the reality of this whole thing is everybody's worried about us. You know, we got to find a new starter. Ole Miss is having to find two. One of them because Townsend has been injured, and then Lebert has been ineffective. And so in that respect, I think it kind of favors us. One of the guys that really impressed me, though, is I mentioned they only threw two pitchers on Thursday, is that Taylor Rapp, Arabe, R-A-B-E. I thought he was really good. Big physical kid, still kind of filling out the frame, but I thought he was good against Kentucky. And I thought with his size, when he throws that changeup and the breaker, it's a little more deceptive because he does a good job with the arm speed and kind of tunneling things out of there. And again, the numbers kind of reflect that, just 12 hits in 18 innings and 24 strikeouts against two walks. So, yeah, you're going to see him at some point this weekend. Impressive kid. Impressive. I have not seen the full Ole Miss pitching staff in action. You know, Calhoun's a guy that they talked about maybe would start if they needed him. I'm sure we'll see him at some point this weekend. He's 1-1 with a 3.60 ERA. But as a staff, it's a 3.67 earned run average. And Bianco says he likes how they can pitch it. And, of course, he's watched him play a lot more than you and I have. But when you look at, you know, the ERA, that's kind of middle of the pack. They're running seventh out of 16 teams, so they're right there. Florida's 3.68. So they're basically 1/100th away from being smack dab in the middle. So it'll be interesting. The pen is not especially deep, but they got some pieces out there that are interesting for certain. But if you ask me, you know, kind of what I think about the Charlie Foster thing, and I've touched on it a little bit too, I think with their struggles against lefties, it makes sense to start a lefty. We don't have a lot of options there. Charlie going on the road, going to be a hostile environment. He's going to have to be repeatable in the delivery. He's going to have to listen to Justin Parker. He's going to have to execute pitches. And if he makes a mistake, this is a team that will make him pay for it. And there's going to be times on the road that maybe perhaps the crowd gets to us a little bit. Should be a good atmosphere if you're making the trip to Oxford. Should be. But we're going to need Charlie Foster to go out there and do a good job. And the thing, people ask me, Steve, what do you think is a win? Man, if we get three or four good innings, if we get three or four innings from Charlie and get out within a run, even or up, I feel really good about things. You know, you need a bridge to get from Charlie to Ben. And you don't need that bridge to be too lengthy. So the longer Charlie can go, and keep us in the game, the better chance you get. We just need to kind of get it. We want to get Hunter Elliott out of the game and be within striking distance. And then, again you're probably going to see Rabe. Probably will see him kind of buttoning up behind Hunter Elliott. So, again, it'll be a great series. I like State to take 2 out of 3. Hunter Elliott has had some success against Mississippi State. I suspect that's the game we probably lose. I think it's a 2-1 series. I think they win Friday, we win Saturday, and then Sunday I think kind of turns into a Church League softball game. I like Duke Stone against whoever they throw, and I like our offense against everybody they throw by the time we get to Sunday. I just don't think back-of-the-bullpen pitchers are going to be able to compete with this offense that is one of the best in the country as expected. And the more we learn over the course of a weekend how to attack them, I think Duke is a guy that will obviously go out there with more expertise and insight to this Ole Miss lineup than anybody else. So I think that's how it plays out. If State wins on Friday, I think there's a good chance we sweep. But this is a quality Ole Miss team. And anybody that says, oh, well, you know, Ole Miss is going to show up to play. One of the things that we have to do is not give that crowd momentum, because they're a crowd that kind of wills them along. When they get you on the ropes, you know, that crowd kind of goes along with them. And they know Hunter is their guy. They know that we're not starting McPherson. So they're expecting to win tomorrow. And that's the thing that kind of works against them too. In the event that we do win, all of a sudden, it kind of takes some of the energy out of the ballpark and really the fan base going into the rest of the weekend. Because in many respects, our most effective pitcher is going on Saturday, and they don't even know who we're starting. In the event that we win Friday and Saturday, we might be able to take over the stadium on Sunday. But listen, I have a tremendous amount of respect for Mike Bianco. I probably have more respect for him than most Ole Miss fans do. They had no real baseball tradition before he got there. They can say whatever they want to. Guys, they had not been to Omaha since 1972 until Bianco took them in 14. So please save me all the talk about, oh, you know, we're rivals. We're not. We're not. Not in baseball. You're our in-state rival, but we've always been kind of shooting a little bit higher than Ole Miss baseball. So give Bianco some credit for coming in and making this rivalry competitive. He has been. And again, what's he been, 19 times at the NCAA tournament? Yeah. I mean, so whether you like him or not, you have to respect what Mike Bianco has done. And again, if you look, it's kind of a carbon copy with him. You know, they get these guys, they bulk them up, they beef them up, and it's not always good weight, but they beef them up and get them stronger and try to hit the ball out of the ballpark. So if we go out there and pitch well and we pump those strikeouts up, is because, as I mentioned, in the 10, when they've had 10 strikeouts or more per game, they've been basically a .500 team. So that gives you an even better chance to win it. Do your best to keep the ball in the ball yard. And at some point, they're going to hit home runs because that's what they do offensively. But if you can keep the ball in the ballpark, and when you do give it up, it's a solo shot, and then get those strikeouts up, you got a great chance to win this series and perhaps sweep. But I'm not calling for a sweep. Please understand. All right, so the SEC availability report is out, and the only Bulldog listed is Ryan McPherson. So no surprise there. On the Ole Miss side, they have 3 pitchers that are questionable. One of those we've already discussed, Cade Townsend. And I'm going to run down these numbers here for you, too. Just there are 3 pitchers from Ole Miss that are listed as questionable. Cade Townsend's 2-0 in the year, 0.92 ERA, 19.2 innings pitch, 11 hits, just only 2 earned runs, 32 Ks against his 7 walks. Opponents hitting .169. If he does pitch, he might be a little rusty. Well, you never know. You never know. Marco Sepulveda is also listed as questionable by Ole Miss. And a guy that just really hadn't shown up in my scouting reports here, but he has made 4 appearances, including 1 start, no record, 4.50 ERA, just 6 innings pitch, allowed 5 hits, 3 runs, 9 strikeouts, and 2 walks. So he will not be available. And then Grayson Gibson, has pitched a little more extensively out of the bullpen. 6 appearances, 1-1 record, 2.25 ERA, 12 innings pitched, 3 earned runs on 5 hits, 11 strikeouts, 4 walks. Opponent's hitting is .132. That may be a little more significant there. But it's not like they don't have some other arms. They do. But that's the latest on who's available and who's not. So we kind of have a pretty good idea. Nobody officially out for Ole Miss, but 3 guys questionable. Probably pretty good chance we don't see those guys, but you can't rule it out. You can't rule it out. And you know, Kay Townsend has a bright future ahead of him. They're not going to rush him back before he's ready. But as Bianco said, you may see him this weekend. You wonder if that's a little gamesmanship or not. You know, we'll see. But maybe a scenario where if we do get a split on Friday, Saturday, they may start him on Sunday just to kind of get him back out there as an opener. You know, we'll see. But that's where things sit right now. Time for our close with Blair. Player of the day, brought to you by Blair Chandler, my friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry. Man, we love Blair. We do. Many of you don't know him yet, but I'm going to give you his phone number because you should know him. His phone number is 601-500-2344. 601-500-2344. And you ask yourself, Steve, why do I need to know that number? Well, you never know when life's going to throw you a curveball. Maybe there's a relationship change, positive or negative, right? Maybe you need to get closer to family for one reason or another. Maybe you get a job change, and you know what? You've got to make a change of residence. Rather than deal with all of this by yourself, let Blair do the heavy lifting for you. He is a mortgage professional with over 25 years of experience in this meat grinder of an industry and a bulldog through and through. Licensed to practice in multiple states, whether you're looking to refinance or buy a home, the only name to know, Blair Chandler. Now, underwriting can be difficult. That's why you need a seasoned loan originator that can write loans to give you the best chance for approval, right? It's true. Sometimes people get turned down because they have the wrong LO. There's the reason the website's called Close with Blair, because he can get you to closing table when so many others can't. So whether you're looking for your first home, your next home, or perhaps your retirement home, or even that game day condo, which might be more affordable than you think, Blair Chandler, the name to know. Hit him up today, closeatblair.com. Now it's time for today's top 10 list. And it kind of took me a while to get to today's topic. As always, brought to you by Kalido Guitars, CalidoGuitars.com. Your one-stop shop for all your guitar playing needs. They specialize in guitars, but they do a little bit of everything. If you're looking for a banjo, a ukulele, a fiddle, anything with strings on it, there's a chance they're going to have it for you, and they're going to be able to sell it to you at a discounted price. Number one, because they're people that are trying to make a living, not make a killing. But number two, because I'm going to give you a promo code. I've got several items from Kalido Guitars, and I love them all. It makes me feel like a better guitar player, to be honest with you. Like, to have professional gear, it makes you want to play a little bit more. It does. And the guitar looks so cool. It does. It does. I got a Steve Vai Signature original. You could have one too. Maybe we just start a club. Maybe we start a band together and we all just have the same guitar. Maybe that's our thing. Maybe that's our gimmick, right? Nevertheless, no matter your level of skill, expertise, or experience, Kalido Guitars has a guitar for you. If you're brand new to the instrument or you're picking it back up for the first time and you don't want to make a big investment, you can find a beginner's guitar at a discounted price at Kalido Guitars. Maybe you've graduated and it's time to kind of upgrade the rig, right? I think it's always a great time to upgrade the rig, honestly. Anytime that you get a new guitar, you want to play it a little more often. And maybe you're a professional. That's what happens, right? This is the guitar shop for every level of skill in guitar play. Beginner, intermediate, expert. You can get it all, right? Now, you can stop by their great, expansive showroom in Lake Jackson, Texas, when you're in the greater Houston area. Chances are you're going to take some home with you. You can find everything you need there. Gig bags, cases, accessories, strings. Everything you need to be a better guitar player except for the practice time, right? Now, promo code is going to be BSR. We wanted to keep it simple. You can use it in person. You can use it over the phone. Or you can use it online. And the thing about those phone orders, You may have some specifications you want this guitar to meet. And you can call them and they'll dress it up the way you want. How cool is that? You go to one of these online shops, you're going to put your hard-earned money on that website, and they're just going to go grab a guitar out of the warehouse. It's going to slap a sticker on it. They're going to send it to you. And they're going to say, best of luck. Not these guys. Nope. They're going to make sure you're satisfied. And they're Bulldogs through and through. Each one of them. So that promo code BSR gets you 10% off their already low price. That gets you no shipping. That gets you no sales tax unless you live in the great state of Texas. And they're going to make a 5% donation based on your purchase price to the Bulldog Excellence Fund. Everybody wins. You win because you get a quality instrument at a discounted price. They win because they get more Mississippi State business. And Mississippi State wins. And when they win, we all win. Yeah. So Kalita Guitars, proud sponsor of the top 10 list. Okay. Got a request. And I'm going to think about this a little more too. Because it kind of led me down. It was about Skid Row, okay? And so this person told me that Slave to the Grind is one of their favorite albums of all time. And I agree. It's one of my favorites. And it came out at a very important time in my life. And there are some songs on there that really, you know, evoke some real emotion for me. Like In a Darkened Room, really get, even all these years later, it gets to me. Because it reminds me of a time when I was really vulnerable and really weak. You know, really dealing with life on life's terms. But I love the album. I do, and I can still sing it start to finish. Not nearly as well as Sebastian Bach can, but I still remember all the lyrics to that album, start to finish. Like, when it was the first metal album to debut at number one. It was so highly anticipated, because out of nowhere, Skid Row, just like, they went out with Bon Jovi, and they were everywhere, and you're like, oh my gosh, where have these guys been? You was going wild, 18 in life, I remember you. But it felt like every song on that debut album was a single. When they re-released it, the expanded edition, they gave you Forever, which was a B-side that didn't make the original album, but it's from those same recording sessions. But anyway, they asked about Skid Row. Then I thought, well, I've already done the Skids, and I've done some other stuff with Sebastian. And I said, well, what if we did sophomore albums? I said, I think we've done that. So I had Roy check our history. And yes, we've done sophomore albums. We've done sophomore in metal. We've done a lot of that stuff. And then I thought, how have we not done Skid Row? So I'm not going to give the name. I'm going to save it for when I put something else together. And it's kind of more of what you asked for. But I realized we haven't done post-Sebastian Skid Row. Now, some of you right now will say, Steve, there is no Skid Row without Sebastian. And I think in some respects that's true. But Rachel Bowen, the great bass player, released the debut single off his solo album today. And I thought, you know, or yesterday. And I said, well, let's do this. Because, like, I love that B-Sides Ourselves EP, you know, where Rachel sings Psychotherapy from the Ramones. It's great. This initial track off Bowen's solo album is kind of punk rocky too, right? And I've been looking back up. I listened to it. I think it's My Own Worst Enemy or Enemy to Myself or something like that. Rachel Bowen's debut single is At War With Myself. The name of the album is Gargoyle of the Garden State. And you remember how cool Rachel looked, like with that nose ring and the earring and the chain going between the two? I wouldn't recommend that, but it's a cool look. Probably not, you know, probably not real practical. Probably only stage wear. So I thought, hey, as much as I didn't like post-Sebastian Skid Row, is more the point, I said, let me jam some of this stuff today and kind of get a feeling. Like, I love the album they did with Eric Grunwald that unfortunately he had cancer, but he's still living. But I love the return to who Skid Row is. It just felt like they lost their way with Johnny Solinger. And God rest his soul, he died a couple years ago. But I'm going to run through this. They had the Thick Skin album that's not available on iTunes. And I thought it was just okay. The song Ghost is pretty interesting. But Revolutions Per Minute and you know, some of the EP stuff is out there. And then, of course, The Gang's All Here, which is a great album. If you like Skid Row, you should know that album. It's the most recent one, came out a couple years ago. It's going to be featured in our list today, too. So let's go. Number 10, ironically, Let's Go is the number 10 track. I like it. It's a little bit of a banger. I'm just going to lay it for what it is. God rest his soul. But Johnny Solinger is just not in the same league as Sebastian Bach. And I think because of some of his vocal limitations, it kind of changed the composition. They tried to have a little more modern sound. It just didn't work as well. Number nine, Damnation Army. I like this one. I love Snakes playing on this one. It's a killer track. It really is. Number eight, This Is Killing Me. It's kind of a ballad type thing. It's not I Remember You. It's not. But it is an interesting track. Like, if you can get past the point of this is Skid Row with a different singer, if you just listen to the song for the sake of the song, I think you'll appreciate it. Number seven on your list is Tear It Down. Now, this is one that I think is probably underappreciated, to be quite honest with you. I think a lot of people, like me, just said, I'm going to move on from Skid Row without Sebastian. It won't be the same. I think if you give this one another try, I think you'll enjoy it. Number six, Catch Your Fall. This is another one, As We Go, I think makes things a little bit better, right? I think this is one of those songs. I think lyrically, it's really strong. The vocal is good. The instrumentation's really good. Number five is Get Up. And I think this is the best song, maybe the second best song of the Johnny Solinger era of Skid Row. Number four, I love this one. And when we first talked about this album, one of you hit me up and said, Steve, my favorite track on The Gang's All Here is Time Bomb. That's your number four track today. Super, super cool. Number three, Disease. This is the one I really think that Johnny Solinger maybe made Skid Row a little more like his own band. He ended up getting fired. And then they went out and got Tony Harnell from TNT, which I was super excited about because I love TNT. TNT's Tell No Tales, Knights of the New Thunder, and Intuition were mainstays for me in high school. I absolutely loved them. And Tony, big vocals. I thought he could have pulled the Sebastian stuff off. But then they went on with JT Threed, I guess, and then eventually Eric. And, of course, Lizzie Hale from Hellstorm did some shows with them to kind of close it out. I almost wish she would have stayed. Number two, it's the title track of the album with Eric, the most recent album, The Gang's All Here. And there's some asides in there about some characters in some original Skid Row material. Like they talk about Tricky Little Vicky, you know. That's from Big Guns, I guess. Yeah, Big Guns. And a little talk about Ricky, right? There's a lot of that kind of throw in an ode to the beginning of Skid Row. But number one, the best Skid Row song after the Sebastian Bach era ended, without any question, in my mind, is Hell or High Water. I absolutely love this song. And I love the fact that it's kind of Skid Row getting back to the classic traditional sound of the band. It's like they experimented for a few years, and it's like we're going to go back to what we do best. And I think that album is really kind of a return to the proper direction for the Skids. And what's ironic, too, is a lot of people don't understand. Like, Sebastian Bach, obviously, extremely talented guy, but a little bit obnoxious, right? I mean, I can't imagine being with a band with him all the time. But they had a big fight because Kiss wanted Skid Row to go out as an opener on tour, and Sebastian Bach kind of agreed to it. Well, Rachel Bolan is the leader of the band. And he's like, dude, we're too big a band to be an opening act. And Sebastian says something that proved to be rather prophetic. He says, we're never going to be too big of a band to open for Kiss. That's probably a fair statement. So he and Snake get into an argument about it. They fire Sebastian. And then they put together a band called Ozone Monday and kind of performed under that title. And there's some YouTube stuff out there you can find. It's interesting. It's almost like they were chasing trends. And then they went out and toured with Motley and eventually reverted back to Skid Row and ironically went out and opened for Kiss. Went out and opened for Kiss after all. Right? So Sebastian was right. He was right. And I can only begin to imagine how many people would have enjoyed seeing the classic Skid Row lineup with Kiss. But instead, they got the Johnny Solinger version. And I think the only song off Subhuman Race, which is a very interesting album for Skid Row, it was quite the departure from Slave to the Grind, was Beat Yourself Blind. That continued to be part of the set list for a while. Into Another is my favorite track off Subhuman Race. But man, that album is so incredibly disjointed. You can tell there was some dysfunction within the band and in the studio because there's just no flow to the album whatsoever. Like, you put on the debut, self-titled debut, all the way through, it all kind of clicks. You put on Slave to the Grind, it's a masterpiece from start to finish. And you get to Subhuman Race. After they took a bit of a hiatus because Doc McGee's like, hey, let's let this grunge thing kind of wind its way out. Which it did, but there wasn't a lot of room for bands like Skid Row. And Skid Row didn't do themselves any favor by kind of writing a weird album. Like, if they had come back and kind of capitalized on the Slave to the Grind thing, I think things may have been different. But taking time off, you kind of lose the chemistry a little bit. But anyway, so we'll get back to what our original request was. But again, I know that's a convoluted explanation on how we got here today. But that's my top 10 Skid Row songs post Sebastian Bach. And I agree with you. Many of you are like, Steve, it's just not the same. You're right, it's not the same. But I thought I would just kind of share with you kind of my thoughts about this. But you can't look at it like this is Skid Row. You just kind of listen to it for what it is. But again, if you like classic Skid Row, you got to listen to The Gang's All Here. Great, great album. If you have ideas for the top 10 list, reach out, let me know. Best way to do that is to hit up my friend, Roy Samanti at Dogmatic67, DAWGMATIC67. You can find our great list on Spotify under that same handle, and you can find me on all forms of social media at ScoutSteveR. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. Man, we love Campus Bookmart, and why? Well, they got stuff we want. What do we want? More Mississippi State merch. If it is gift-buying time in your life, whether it be a birthday or a holiday, something like that, don't overthink it. Don't get cute. Don't get somebody the Jelly of the Month Club unless it's a gag gift. What we really want is more Mississippi State stuff, whether it's apparel, anything you need to detail out your fan cave, your pet, whatever, you can find it at Campus Bookmart. Go by and see their smiling faces the next time you're in Starkville. If you can't make it to town, or perhaps game day is a difficult shopping day for you, visit them on the World Wide Web, and you can peruse the best selection of Mississippi State merchandise in the known universe. CampusBookmart.net is the way to go. CampusBookmart.net will give you some incentive, too. Promo code BSR. You know it well. Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than $75, absolutely incomplete. And again, a lot of new M over S merch available to you. It is baseball season. It's going to be warming up sooner rather than later, and you're going to want something fresh, right? Don't go out there in some, you know, maroon is all that matters t-shirt. Get a brand new M over S shirt. You'll be glad you did. Campus Bookmart, your one-stop shop for all your Mississippi State merchandising needs. All right, let's take a look at only one game on the schedule last night. And Missouri jumps out to a 2-0 lead and then quickly falls behind 3-2 and then 5-2 and eventually 9-2. And then they score two in the eighth and then give up another and lose to Lindenwood, who is 11-13 overall. And 0-3 in their league. Rough. Rough, to say the least. They played that game in St. Charles, Missouri at the Lou Brock Sports Complex. Sure, it was a barn burner of an atmosphere. But 9 hits apiece, but Lindenwood a little more efficient in what they did. And they went at 10-4. Tonight, Oklahoma and Texas. Matter of fact, they're already playing. Let's see if we can't get you guys an update. By the time you listen to this show, you'll already know kind of how that game turned out, but we'll see. But can we get this going, SEC website? Can we get it figured out here? I don't know why things are always, like, I just want things to work. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I work hard. I just want things to work, and I get frustrated when things don't work, especially things that we pay for. And we're not paying for this, but nevertheless, they're making it available, as a public service, and it's not working. In the early going of this ball game, it is 6-0 Texas over Oklahoma. And LJ Mercurius is a guy that we talked, not Kyson Witherspoon, but a bona fide Friday night starter. Texas has already gotten him 6 runs on 9 hits and just 2 innings pitched. So it looks good for Texas. Once I finish recording this up, I'm going to go watch the rest of this game. Let's look at the rest of the weekend. I'll give you my picks. South Carolina's at Georgia. That's a no-brainer. Even though South Carolina's played a little bit better since the firing of Palmieri, you know, when you don't have the horses, you don't have the horses. And South Carolina doesn't have the horses. And I shared earlier this year that portal class was based on quantity rather than quality, and it's playing out in real time on the baseball diamond every weekend. And they'll head down to Foley Field. I think Georgia's going to score some big runs. Now, that understood, South Carolina nearly took 2 out of 3 from Arkansas. So we'd love for South Carolina to get one. I just don't think it's fair to expect that. Daniel Jackson, of course, pacing the Georgia offense with a .411 average, 15 jacks, 38 RBI. Florida and Arkansas at Baum Walker. This will be interesting. Florida got embarrassed last weekend. I think Arkansas was vulnerable. I know they're the number 4 team. We went and saw them up close and personal, and we feel like we should have taken that series again. It's tough to go play at Baum Walker. We got a lot of new in this team. Florida will go up there, and it'll be an exciting atmosphere. Florida opens up with a 3-game sweep, and then they get swept by Alabama last week. Which Florida team shows up? I think, one, it's at least good enough to get a split, but I think we'll take Arkansas 2-1. Texas A&M beat Missouri. Weird things tend to happen when Missouri's around. I like A&M here, even though I don't think A&M is a great team. They're good enough to go get a dub there. I think they take it 2-1. I think Missouri gets one from A&M. If they get 2, which would be a shocker, A&M clearly falls out of top 25. Auburn and Alabama, the Iron Bowl baseball weekend series. This should be a fun one. Alabama pitched it exceptionally well last weekend. They don't have a lot of offense. I think these games will be relatively low scoring. I like the strength of this Auburn pitching staff. I don't know that Auburn has enough offense to make it to Omaha. I do think they have enough offense to win the series in Tuscaloosa. So we're going to take Auburn with a big road series. Number 5, Auburn's 20-4. I think they get a couple wins this weekend at the expense of Alabama. We'd like Alabama to win this. I just don't know if they have the horses. Kentucky will beat LSU. And isn't it a great time to head down to Alex Box Stadium when LSU is scuffling? And they are. And everybody sees it. You lose back-to-back series. And now Kentucky comes in, and Kentucky's so scrappy. Like, Kentucky's not just going to line up and play baseball with you. Nick Mangione's going to turn this thing into a brass knuckle fight, man. That's what's going to happen. And if he can go out there and steal a win and make it a split getting to Sunday, I could see Kentucky winning this thing. Just because, number one, I think Nick is the guy that gets the most out of his club. But also, LSU just hasn't figured it out. It's still so hard to win at Alex Box. It truly is. So let's take the Tigers 2-1 over Kentucky. 2-1. But I'm pulling for Kentucky. Of course, Mississippi State and Ole Miss, you know my feeling about that. We're going 2-1 in favor of the Bulldogs. Oklahoma and Texas. I like Texas, number one, being at home. I just don't think offensively Oklahoma has enough. What they've got to do is stay in the game and get into the bullpen. They've got to outlast a starter. They haven't got good starting pitching tonight. But if they can get into the bullpen and the game's still hanging the balance, I think Oklahoma can get one. But let's pick Texas as the winner. Tennessee is at Vanderbilt. And, man, is Vanderbilt ever in a bad spot. Of course, the news early this week, Nye is now out for the year. He was did not pitch against us. He was listed as questionable. Didn't pitch against us, and then they announced this week that he's out. Of course, they win that opening series against LSU, and I think some of that, too, is because, you know, it's amazing when you lower the hurdles how much faster everybody is. You move the right field wall in, and then all of a sudden you become a power-hitting team. Now, give them some respect. They hit some solo shots against us, but that was when we had some separation and we're just kind of pounding the zone. But Tennessee also gets to hit at that right-handed hitter's friendly park. And I think Tennessee, obviously, is not the Tennessee that they were under Tony Vitello. I think that's fair to say. I think we're all seeing it play out. But I think Tennessee takes this series 2-1. Vanderbilt pitching is not good. They're not good. They basically have a Saturday, possibly a Sunday guy throwing on Fridays. And I don't know that I wouldn't move him, to be honest with you. I don't know that I would throw him on Friday. We're talking about Fennell, Cooper Fennell, Connor Fennell. I might move him to Saturday to give me a better chance to get a game. And maybe you do that after the change in the schedule. I just think throwing your best guy against their best guy when you don't have anything behind him might even be coaching malpractice. I think you've got to find a way to win enough. And you know, right now, I told you guys at the beginning of the year, I was not buying the Vanderbilt hype, and it's the injuries have made it worse. I think they were going to be a team that was probably a 2-seed somewhere, and I'm beginning to wonder if they're going to make the tournament. Now, we're a really good offense. We are. But what we saw last weekend from Vanderbilt, pitching-wise, is alarming. And I don't care who you are or where you're from, when you realize you can't pitch it, and as Mike Bianco said earlier this week, if you're going to be great at something, be great at pitching. You can kind of figure the rest of it out. But, man, this Vanderbilt team, while they have some horses offensively, and maybe they're good enough to take a game from Tennessee because it's not a great Tennessee team, I think Vanderbilt is one of those teams right now that is in the danger zone, very much in the danger zone about making the tournament. That's not something that I expected to say beginning of this year, but that's what injuries do to you. You know, injuries just kind of change how it all works. The longest winning streak right now, the current active winning streak in the Southeastern Conference belongs to your Bulldogs, who have won 5 in a row. Yeah, 5 in a row. And you get the tiebreaker in the SEC standings because you're 21-4. You're 4-2 in the league, but you get, you know, the benefit of that. Bulldogs 17-0 at home, obviously. We're going to have been great on the road, but we're going to have to figure it out. You know, you lose a game at Southern Miss and 2 at Arkansas. Again, you know, very good teams. We got to find a way to get some road wins out there. But the thing that jumps out to me, and even through 2 weekends, right, I think we all agree South Carolina, Missouri not going to make the tournament. Even though we're 2 weekends in, we've seen enough to feel like we're not going to make the tournament, right? Those two are not going to make it. Then just above them, there are 3 other teams, A&M, LSU, and Vandy are 2-4. Now, granted, we've only played 6 conference games. We've got 24 more to go. But I would say of those 3 teams, the one that is the most vulnerable is Vandy. And they're 14-12 overall. Guys, they could have a losing record come Monday. Let that sink in for a second. Almost 30 games into the schedule, and you got a losing record. Then you start having guys kind of check out on you a little bit too. I don't care what kind of culture you got. It's on human nature. Then there's LSU and A&M at 2-4. I think A&M got way too much hype in the beginning. Everybody thought, well, Grahovic is back and Sorrell's back, and that's true. I mean, that's a great 1-2 punch there. It's a great tandem. The pitching's not what it should be. And I think the schedule is going to really work against them. And I think they're a team, too, that's kind of in danger zone, too. You feel like, hey, they ought to have a decent weekend. But the pain is coming. Of those 2-4 teams, I'm going to tell you, I think LSU is the one that still figures it out. I don't see them hosting. I do see them making the tournament, kind of like it was just, you know, back in 24. I think it'll be something like that. Pitching has been a real disappointment for LSU, but they're 17-9. But, man, when you start working through these losses, they have some abysmal losses. And they're not done losing in the Southeastern Conference by any stretch of the imagination. But just kind of looking at some of the analytics here for SEC teams, obviously Auburn doing great right now. And again, I said earlier this year, I really felt like they were a team that people were kind of sleeping on, even though they were ranked high. Nobody was really talking about Auburn. And if they can figure some things out, they scheduled well, they could make it. to Omaha. I just worry about that offense a little bit. But they got four losses this year. All of them are quad two or better. You look at Texas. Of course, that loss the other night was abysmal. They've got four losses too, but one of them is a quad three. They're 11-1 in quad three games. Kind of getting a little bit closer here. Ole Miss, 6-6 against a quad one, 2-0 quad two, and then 4-1 against quad three. So they've only got one bad loss, which is why the RPI is still so high. Florida already has two quad four losses. There's no shame in playing those games, but you got to win them. Mississippi State, 4-4 against quad one. No bad losses. Those are the things that help. Alabama, similar situation. They have one quad three loss, no quad fours. 4-4 against quad one, 1-2 against quad two. You know, so Alabama still afloat. I just think in the end it catches up with them. Kentucky is 4-2 against quad one, and then they have a quad three and a quad four loss. But I think Kentucky, because of the fact that Nick knows how to play the RPI game, they'll make the tournament. A&M, we've talked about them. They don't have the bad loss yet. Everything, they have five losses, but they're all quad two or better. Oklahoma, kind of scattered out. They don't have the real bad loss yet. They have one that's a quad three. But right there, 20 in the RPI, they just haven't played many quad one teams, but the SEC schedule will take care of a lot of that. But I think Oklahoma's probably a road regional team. I really do. I don't think there are really any stars on that team. I think that's one of the things that you need. You look at Tennessee, they've got, what is it, seven losses? Yeah, seven losses, and they're scattered out. They have one quad four, one quad three, and then everything else is quad two or better. But if you're Tennessee and you're already approaching 10 losses, you got to begin to kind of wonder what's going to happen down the stretch when you really get into the heart of your schedule. Tennessee's going to have to play better. And again, I think they're good enough to be a road regional team. I just don't think that that team is going to – they might not even make it out of a regional. Georgia's RPI, they're 20-6, and everybody sees all the home runs. You're like, dude, well, guys, they've played three quad one games. That's it. And, of course, that came just last week. They've played 12 quad four games. We've played a bunch of those quad four games too, thanks in large to Vanderbilt being a quad four for a while. But Georgia's 44 in the RPI. Now, some of that's going to come up, but what I'm forecasting here is as their schedule gets a little more difficult, they're going to drop some games. Arkansas, 49 in the RPI. They have three quad four losses. You start thinking about that. Right, and they hadn't been great at home. They've already got five losses at home. They only had four all of last year. We need that RPI to be good, and I think in the end it'll be probably an RPI in the teens. But you start wondering about hosting when you've already got three quad four losses. Now, the good thing is you're not going to play a lot more quad four teams, but they can ill afford to lose any more midweek games. And again, I would love to play them again. Like if we got paired up with them in a super regional, I would be overjoyed. And chances are that would be coming here, right? LSU, we talked about that. LSU's RPI is 105. Five non-conference losses, four of them are quad four. So you remember in 24, everybody said, oh, there's no way Mississippi State's hosting. We don't care what their ranking is in the SEC. They had four quad four losses. So let's hope that standard is extended, right? That was the blemish on our resume. And when our representation went and sat down in that room, that's what everybody said. They wouldn't even discuss Mississippi State hosting, despite the fact that our RPI was right there in the hosting parameters because we had four quad four losses. We had to grow the game and send everybody out to UC Santa Barbara who couldn't even get out of a regional. It's ridiculous, man. It is. We talk about Missouri. Guys, they're 1-6 against quad one. They're not going to make it. It's not even really worthy of discussion. You know, I mean, you're not going to have to worry about that. That'll all take care of itself. But it's just an interesting dynamic looking at all of this because some teams are already chasing the tournament. Vanderbilt, we talked about them, RPI of 170. They are 12-8. They have five quad four losses, and they are 0-4 against the quad one, and then 0-2 against quad two. So you've played six games against those teams, and you haven't won a single one of them. But 12 of your 14 wins are against quad four teams. Vanderbilt just does not have a resume, and I don't know that they can build one to give themselves an opportunity to move ahead for NCAA tournament. And so, that again, we'll check in on that every now and again. But I think it's important for us to kind of monitor that, because a lot of times people get just caught up in the RPI itself and not understanding kind of how it's constructed. But those quad four losses are problems when you get before the D1 selection committee. When you go out and you schedule poor games and you lose them, you get penalized for it. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle, bar none, especially when you're bringing a large group to town, and you should. We did. We had a great time. We encourage you to do the same. Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. When you do, their Facebook page will auto-populate. You can peruse all the pictures of all the amenities available to you and your guest. Full-service kitchen, wet bar, huge back porch area, fire pit, plenty of parking. That's an underappreciated amenity, because when you get all these people together, you need somewhere for them to park. You don't have to worry. It's the old renovated country club clubhouse out past the Highlands. Plenty of parking for everybody, right? Go enjoy that aspect of it. You don't have to worry about where you park your car. It seems like a small thing now. It won't that day, right? 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. And six bedrooms, two soon-to-be three baths. It's worth your time, for sure. It'll be a great time. When you Google, some booking options are going to pop up, Airbnb, VRBO. You can go that route if you want to. But if you want to save some money, book through the Evolve website. Promo code BSR10. BSR10 gets you 10% off your stay just by listening to this show. I like to help when I can, right? And you guys have made the Stark Vegas Clubhouse feel like a very valuable member of our Boneyard family, and I thank you for that. I thank you for soliciting our sponsors and making this show possible. But I can tell you, you're doing yourself a favor when you book a stay at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Be sure and do it today. Not going to keep harping on this, but it just kind of makes me angry. It does, because some people are taking advantage of your good-natured selves, but there was one today that really irritated me. This Hell State Diamond page on Facebook blocked the page, encouraged others to do it. It's so incredibly bad. And like, there's been three reviews of this page, and everybody is trying to tell everybody this is a fake page, don't do it, but you don't stop. So of course they make a thing about Ron Paul having cancer. And 22 people shared it, 487 people liked it, and there's all these comments. And guys, I'm just ready to give up on you. Like, you, honest to goodness, you were the reason they put "do not drink" on a shampoo bottle. You were the reason that all these people fall for these Nigerian prince scams. It's you. It's you. You'd say, that never happened to me. It's happening to you. It is happening to you. It infuriates me. I don't know why it bothers me as much as it does. We work really hard. I tell you why it infuriates me. It's because every time they post something like this, some gullible soul thinks it's true, and the next thing you know, my inbox is on fire. Steve, what's going on? Like, there's another one about Ace Reese buying a hotel room or buying a hotel. There's a thing about Brian O'Connor. Ace Reese transfers, and it's confirmed. Like, you know better. Like, why would you share that? And when you see those stories pop up, why wouldn't you think, hey, this isn't a reputable place? Maybe I should unfollow this page. You should. So please, 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 look out for other people and let them know, because not everybody is maybe as comfortable on Al Gore's internet as they should be, and they think everything is true. So please help them help themselves. A few other things to talk about. As we confirmed it, and everybody kind of knew it was our midweek record, and you think, well, if it's got to be state, right? The ball game Tuesday night, 12,887 fans, is the largest midweek crowd in the history of baseball in the state of Mississippi. Yeah, bigger than Ole Miss's record. Their record happened April 23rd, 2022, when we visited up there, 12,503. So we drew more in a midweek than Ole Miss has ever drawn in a game, home game ever, right? And that's not throwing shade. It's just how it is. And I read an article about that this morning. First thing I did some research, put it out there. And again, so now Mississippi State holds that record. We're also part of the biggest attendance record at Ole Miss. We are the largest collegiate crowd ever at Keesler Federal. The only game that beat us is when the Shuckers played the Braves. They had a big promotion down there. The Tulane game earlier this year, 6,112. Biggest collegiate event ever at Keesler Federal, formerly Shuckers Ballpark, formerly MGM. And, of course, the Bulldogs and Rebels shared the record for attendance for a baseball game at Trustmark Park dating back to 2019. So, yeah, many of you suspected it, and I felt like, you know what, it's worth researching because so many people are like, this, Steve, it's got to be the record. And I agreed, but now we know officially, yes, it is the record. Not just for us, but for everybody in the state of Mississippi. We've also picked up a new transfer. We talked about him the other day. Linebacker transfers in from Syracuse. James Hurd is his name, and he is already signed with Mississippi State and will be on campus in June. Again, began his career. Let's see here. Yeah, began his career at West Virginia. Played in three games, did not record any statistics back in 23, and took a redshirt year for that. In 2024, at Syracuse, he played in 11 games, made 7 tackles, a pick, also had half TFL in a hurry, and mainly in non-conference games, but did get some other play too. And then last year, he was mainly a special teams guy and a rotation guy, but he didn't make any plays. So he hits a portal, and so he's essentially coming in to be a depth piece for us. We don't expect him to start. We're not expecting him to be on the two deep. He'll probably be a special teams guy, maybe be a guy that could play a little bit deeper. But, you know, he has 2 years of eligibility remaining, so maybe perhaps he plays himself into something else. He is a native of New Jersey, Camden, New Jersey, 6'2", 230-pounder. Also of note, Mississippi State football – going to have a fan appreciation type day this spring. So if you'd like to come out and learn a little bit more about your football team, you can. How about that? April the 11th. Be here before you know it. Going to be an exciting day in Mississippi State. So you might want to come up the night before. And, you know, just kind of giving you some traveling advisement here. 9:30, Saturday, April 11th, we're going to take the field at Davis-Wade Stadium. It's going to be a scrimmage, going to be some interesting things. And then following the scrimmage, it's going to be a 100-play scrimmage, they're going to have a photo and autograph session. So you can come meet one of your favorite Bulldogs or multiple and just have a good time. So that's something to be mindful of. That's going to be a very, very busy day on campus. And again, many of you will be here for baseball Friday nights. So you'll just stay over. But we're going to have the scrimmage, 9:30. And then softball is going to host Arkansas at 2. And then the Diamond Dogs will play that night against Tennessee. So you can make a full day of it on campus or in Starkville. So put that on your calendar. Be mindful of that as we kind of move forward. I think it's a great thing. You guys deserve a little more access. And, you know, I don't know what the parameters are going to be around media that day, but we'll do our best to get out there and take some pictures if they let us. And we've had 2 open sessions so far. We had about 5 or 6 periods last week, 5 or 6 this week, and we're grateful for it. We'd love to have more, but we are grateful for what they give us. We had the opportunity today to speak to 4 players. And, again, you can always find this content for free at Gene's page. I don't know if you're going to find a lot of the content from today anywhere else because for some reason we didn't have a lot of media there. I don't understand that, but we were there. And again, we take it very seriously, but I don't know what's going on in other people's lives. I'm not in any way trying to throw shade here, but it just kind of surprised me. But that understood, you're getting to hear a little bit more from your transfers. And that is something that I think is a great thing because they haven't won a job yet. Like, we haven't had Isaac Smith yet, right? We always have Isaac Smith. We haven't had Isaac Smith, who is one of the leaders on this team. We have had Anthony Evans. But I like you guys having the opportunity to hear from, you know, your Bulldog guys, like, for the first time. I think that's an important aspect of it. And so, you know, obviously, we need to be there to ensure you get a chance to watch those videos and read those stories. And so we do our best to always be there to take care of you guys. But again, even if you're not a subscriber, you can go and listen and watch what those players had to say. It's an important aspect of it. Right, we do that for you, and so just kind of working through this. We'll have pro day tomorrow. Now we don't have a lot of guys that we expect to get drafted. Brennan Thompson may, Davin Booth I think will probably go to camp with somebody, but they will have an opportunity to come work out. Brandon Snay is also going to work out at State's pro day, or less that he was at last report. So we'll have that content, and we'll probably kind of spread that out over the weekend. You know, it's a big baseball weekend, but we want to keep you apprised of what's happening with football. And I know many of you are eager to hear from Brennan Thompson, who is probably our best chance of having a guy drafted. You know, Jacoby Jackson, maybe a guy that goes to camp with somebody too. So we're going to do our best. Whatever players they make available to us, we'll provide that to you. And then we'll talk to Jeff Lebby on Saturday. So that will be something interesting as well. So we will have in-person coverage of Pro Day and the Ole Miss Baseball Series, and then, of course, Jeff Lebby on Saturday. And so we'll share that all that with you for free, and you'll have an opportunity to kind of hear what coaches had to say and kind of be post-scrimmage. And we'll have to hustle to get that up, obviously, before baseball gets going. But we will. We'd encourage you to come check that out. Again, you should always be a subscriber to Gene's page. But even if you're not, if for some reason maybe you can't afford it, or maybe you haven't been convinced, you can still come peruse that content for free. Like, we disseminate that out all over social media just to kind of make it kind of in your face, right? We want to make sure that it's on your timeline so you have an opportunity in case you've forgotten, oh, they had football availability today. Let me go see what Kamario Taylor had to say, or what did Jeff Lebby have to say about the scrimmage. So that's an important aspect of all of this stuff. But anyway, we'll get ready to wrap this thing up. And again, this is Thursday night now. And a few things I wanted to say too, because number one, I love you guys and I want you guys to have a great life. And I had somebody recently ask me, you know, some things about, you know, work and business and life, and you get those conversations a lot. I've been doing this, goodness, almost 30 years now. And I'm always happy to impart a little wisdom to those guys. And, you know, like when I went and spoke at Brandon High School, I mean, I love the fact that, like, they did their research and they had some, like, suitable questions. Like, one girl asked me, why do you always wear that hat? Well, it's just kind of a trademark now. It's not because I'm going bald. Far from it. But sometimes, you know, I get my hair done once a year. And so you get a lot of new growth and it gets a little fluffy, shall we say. And so that hat kind of disguises all that. But I thought that was an interesting question. But one of the things I want you guys to understand, and I share this a lot with people in recovery, is there are a lot of people that portray themselves as a victim and they're not. They're volunteers. Right. And I don't want you to be a volunteer in your own misery. And there are some people that's the currency in which they, you know, they exist. It's like there are some people that kind of crave drama because it's a way for them to elicit empathy from other people. Right. It's like, and you see it all the time on Facebook. Oh, my gosh, it happened again. If it continues to happen, right, the first time it happens, maybe you are a victim. But if you continue to stay with that, you are volunteering for that misery. And the worst kind of misery is manufactured misery. But some people kind of get addicted to that. I've got friends like that, that they just kind of crave that stuff, right? It makes them feel alive, because now all of a sudden it's like, oh, let's go check on Jim, right? And I've got a good friend named Jim. I'm not talking about him. I'm just kind of using that generic name as an example. So I encourage you, you're never too old to change your life. Sometimes we complicate all of this, you know, because the solutions to life problems oftentimes are more simple than we make them out to be. But we're just a little bit hesitant or maybe a little bit scared. And it's okay to say that. We're scared of the unknown. It's like, well, the devil I know is better than the devil I don't. Well, it may not be a devil waiting for you after all, right? Maybe an angel waiting for you at the other end of the transition. That's just the reality of life. You never know until you take a chance. And as I shared with this young person, they said, I just feel like I don't have any direction. I just don't know what I want to do. Well, I was 19 once too, and I absolutely put it in a ditch. Absolutely. Lucky to be alive, right? But I am. I live to tell the tale. And that's one of the reasons that I am so transparent, not to show any glory to me, but to God. That God saved me and gave me an opportunity to kind of be a witness to the miracle of recovery. And as I share with this young person, he's like, I've got these big dreams, and I want to pursue this, and I want to pursue that, and I want to pursue that. I said, listen, you're so young, you can afford to do that. You're not married, you don't have any obligations, you don't have any children. And so if you want to go chase this dream, go chase it, because the likelihood of failure in life is extremely high. And wouldn't you rather fail at something you love rather than something you hate? Not to mention, you'll look back one day and you'll wonder, what if? I don't want to live with what ifs, and I hope that you don't either. Say, well, I could have done this. And then what happens is like all the old ball players that never really accomplished anything beyond high school. Well, you know, if I wouldn't have hurt my shoulder, might have had a chance to play at state, maybe go to big leagues, but I hurt my shoulder. And we're just letting ourselves off the hook. The fact of the matter is most of us just weren't good enough. And it's okay to say that. It's okay to be honest with ourselves, because that's the biggest lies we tell are the ones we tell ourselves. We tell other people, oh, you know, maybe I was better than I really was. Let me tell you this, kids, for those of you young bucks who are listening, your dad wasn't nearly as good as he's told you. That doesn't mean he's not a great dad, right? But the reality of it is that so few people actually take a big chance and a big risk at life. And sometimes I don't even think it's a risk. I think sometimes you've got to take ownership of your own destiny and say, you know what? I'd rather go do this and watch it go up in flames and then live the rest of my life saying, at least I gave my dream a chance. At least I did. And I think the lessons you learn from that will help you accomplish some other things that maybe you never thought were possible. That's going to do it for today. I hope you guys have a great weekend. Go out and do something good for yourself, right? Go do something good for yourself. You've earned it. You have. Whether it's go to the ball game, maybe go buy yourself something. Do something good for yourself. Maybe pick up the phone, call an old friend, send a text, right? And say, hey, I've been thinking about you. Just want to make sure you're doing good. Those kinds of texts, man, make the world go round. You never know when you're going to encounter somebody that's dealing with something kind of unknown to you. And just you saying hello and say, hey, I'm just checking in, man. It lets people know they're not alone and that you care. So I on it, you may think I'm weird, and that's okay. I try to always be cognizant from like those clues, right? Like all of a sudden somebody will flash in my mind I hadn't talked to in a while. And I will immediately grab my phone and I'll message them, hey, just want to check in with you. And it's amazing how many times I'll send that message like, oh, Steve, I'm so glad to hear from you. You wouldn't believe what I've been dealing with, right? I am so incredibly supportive of just the 10-second message just to let somebody know you care, right? We all need that. Every one of us, we do. If you haven't done so, go to dirtynoblebook.com. You can sign copies of all my sports titles, plus the personal memoir, When the Bottom Falls, which right now is the best-selling book in the catalog. Thank you very much for that. Come float with us at True Rest Float Spa of Starkville. Dial 662-268-7601. You can speak directly to my beautiful wife, Dana, who recently got her hair cut and had the facial and all that kind of stuff, because that's the kind of husband I am. But also, She loves what she does at the float spa and helping so many other people kind of navigate through just maybe a break, maybe some stress, maybe some chronic pain, some anxiety. She deals with that stuff every single day with different clients. I can promise you there's not a problem that you've encountered that she hadn't, okay? And so you can call her. Dana's a healer. I tell people that all the time. There's a reason she went into nursing. It's a calling more so than a profession for her. Now she's still in wellness. She's just not nursing at a hospital anymore. But she can nurse you. Yeah, she can sit down and talk to you and, of course, get you floating. It's busy, busy, busy these days. But there are some days midweek when she'd have a little more time with you. And again, come join us at jeanspage.com. But until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies and people can see a difference in the way we live.